Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women.
We highlight the Latinx presence in the comic book industry as creators, characters, and fans.
Join us as we talk chisme, comics, fandom, and beer.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Comadres y Comics. This is episode 205. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Hi, guys. How are you guys doing? Welcome back.
Hi. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas. Feliz Dia de Reyes.
Is that?
There was a picture of me on Facebook. I think we went to your house, Sarah, and you had one of the, what's the circle with Jesus inside of it?
The nativity scene?
No, the bread.
Not the circle with Jesus.
Oh, the rosca.
Rosca. Yeah.
The rosca.
Anyhow, there's a picture of me somewhere, and I had my headphones on, so obviously we were recording, and it just was a picture of me with the little baby, and the caption just said, "I found Jesus."
That's hilarious.
Oh my God.
And yeah, I didn't do the rosca this year. I don't know, but I heard that portals make them too. Yeah, so now I really want to.
I was just going to say that Santos from Brothers Bear Podcast.
Bear Podcast.
And Monkey Monster Cosplay. Shared that they got one from Porto's and it looked so good and tasty. And they even mentioned, oh, you know, it's just going to be dry and bland like all the other ones. But they really said that it was really good.
Yeah, I get it why they do it aesthetically, the jelly colors on top of the rosca, but they never taste good to me.
Yeah. It's the same kind of dried fruit that you get in, what's the fruit cake or whatever that people give at Christmas that nobody wants?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Is it called fruit cake?
Yeah, it's fruit cake.
Yeah. I was going to say, isn't it literally just called fruit cake?
Yeah. With all that, it's all candied dried fruit, and it doesn't, those things don't taste good to me.
Yeah, I don't know why they lasted this long as part of some kind of tradition. They're disgusting.
Yeah.
I never liked them. So did you guys have a good Christmas?
It was very quick. It went by very fast. Christmas landed on a weird day for me as far as being involved in the comic book industry because it was on a Monday. And I always go to the after Christmas sales on the day after Christmas. And because it was a Tuesday, I couldn't because Tuesday was the big day for all the books to come in and for me to get the pools ready and everything for Wednesday, which was new comic book day. And so I was not happy about not being able to. I go every year, it's a tradition, to Bath and Body Works because they have their semi-annual sale that starts the day after Christmas. I didn't get to go there. I didn't get to go to Target. I didn't get to do a lot of things because stupid Christmas was on a Monday. Oh, but I will say that I made the best freaking mashed potatoes I've ever made in my entire life. They were so good. I found a TikTok recipe and I followed it and they turned out amazing. But it utilized so much dairy because it utilized heavy whipping cream and also condensed milk. Ugh, my stomach was not happy with me after, but
it was worth it.
for that. Oh gosh, I'm even just thinking about them right now. It's just so, so good. But hit me up if you guys want me to share the TikTok because it was so good. Next time I know I have to take some lactaid.
Definitely.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Yeah. What about you, Jen? What did you do for the holidays?
So I was not able to go home. I was mostly working. I mean, honestly, the holidays always make me depressed even before I was alone, simply because my family just always worked. So I don't really like the holidays in general, or like this time of year, which is funny because I actually like winter. But like I got invited to a friend's house and we did like a little like friend's gift exchange, which I still have yet to complete one of my gift exchanges. It's currently in the works. because it is like a project thing. But that, like, that was a lot of fun. And then this is the first time I made tamales on my own. Because I always like made them with my mom, but this time like I did them alone. And girl, it took me three tries to get the ratio right for everything. But by the third ones, oh my god, it was literally like my mom had made them. Like, it taste wise and everything, I was just like, oh shit, I fucking got it. Because a lot of the stuff that I had to do, it was just like one, like measuring it out on my own, because I was only doing a small batch. And two, like, I don't have the big pots that my mom has. I have like two really small pots, one kind of, what kind of like, even like sort of medium size, not even really medium size, it's pretty small too. So I have like one like big one that's like a steamer. I have like two like small ones, and then I have a really tiny one that makes like one serving of rice. And by one serving of rice, usually what I mean is what would usually serve four people serves one person, and that person's me.
I used to have one of those tiny rice cookers.
Yeah. And so like one, like trying to adjust the recipe for that. And then, but I did find a shortcut. You can cook tamales in the pressure cooker for 30 minutes instead of the 2.5 to 3 hours that you usually put in the small basket. Yes.
I love my Instapot.
Yeah. So just say, depending on how big it, mine is like a pretty average sized one. I don't know if they make them bigger than the one that I have. I don't think they do. But I was able to stuff 12 tamales in there. And that, but those were Guatemalan tamales, so they were like kind of stacked on top of each other. If you were to make Mexican tamales, I think you can get a decent amount in there, and you'll have them in like 30 minutes.
Nice.
I'm going to do that. Mm. I'm going to totally do that, because I've been wanting some like mole tamales and some raja tamales with the pasote and queso.
Oh, yeah, pressure cooked 30 minutes. Yeah. Now, of course, just there's like the warm-up period, and then I like leaving them for 15 to 20 minutes in after they're like done and like in the natural release. So, so overall it does still take like about an hour, because it's like 30 minutes and then like, let's say like 10 to 15 minutes for it to warm up. And then like the other 15 minutes for it to like cool down a little bit and release some of the pressure. It's like an hour, but that's still like 1/3 of the time than it would usually take.
Oh yeah.
So, because you don't have to do it. I experimented with it.
But you got a Latina level.
I thought about that
for Christmas.
Yeah, right. And so that was a lot of fun, and I did like that. I made in total 45 tamales.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Oh my god.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I have two that are left over, but I'm gonna cook them and they're gonna be mine to eat. But, yeah.
Nice.
Awesome. How about you,
Well,
Sarah?
For me, we don't celebrate the 25th. We celebrate the 24th and just stay up until midnight.
Oh, yeah. That's just so the Latino way.
Yes. So what I did to spend the time is I had bought these gingerbread houses that were already constructed. So there's these boxes that I've been holding on for all year, because I bought them on sale after last Christmas for like $4 each.
On my own.
So I've been moving these boxes around the living room all year, which was worth it in the end, because I had a gingerbread building contest.
Oh, cool.
up until 11:30, and whoever won got a gift card for $50 for either CPK or Lucille's.
Oh, nice.
So,
and were they stale?
Yeah, so we don't eat them. We just build them.
What? What a waste.
Yes. Wow. I'm sure it is. But it's a lot of fun, because people start like bagging on each other and, you know, saying, you know, so it was kind of fun how they were doing that. I still haven't posted pictures, and I've been just really reluctant to post pictures, but it was a lot of fun and I got some really good pictures. So maybe I'll make a Christmas 2023 post in February. So, But that's what we did. And then for New Year's, we just stayed at home, and we burned last year's Christmas tree. So our tradition has been to actually buy a natural Christmas tree, but it doesn't just go in the trash. We actually keep it in the backyard. And then on New Year's, we burn the old Christmas tree. So that's our, like, what is it called? And then my brother made some really fancy drinks with, like, Marcello cherries and, I don't know, old fashions. And it was pretty cool. And he bought these little swords, these little metal swords that he pierces the berries fancy. With. It's really cute. Really quite cute. Really fancy. Yeah. He really, like, takes it up a notch. Like, he really takes his drinks very seriously. Like, it almost is like watching an artist paint. It's pretty cool. So that's what we did. It was pretty chill.
Yeah, I tried to entice Sarah to come out to the the hole in the wall bar. There's a dive bar here in downtown Torrance. And Eddie and I, after dinner, walked all around because we worked that night. It was another Sunday. Was it Sunday? Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was. Yeah. Because
so
it was,
we drove Monday, yeah. home and went right to. Right to dinner, and everything was closing early. We barely made it at 7:55, and they're like, just so you know, the kitchen is closing at 8 o'clock. And I was like, oh my, but they let us order, so thankfully we got dinner. And then I was like, okay, let's just walk down to the Crest, closed. Let's walk down to Keegan's, closed. I'm like, okay, last try. Let's go to the branch office. If they're not open, then we don't deserve to have a New Year's drink. And interestingly enough, Foster Freeze was open at 9:30 on New Year's Eve. And she had a line.
She's the only place open.
I know. But yes, branch office was open, and I enjoyed a couple of drinks there until at 9:30 the DJ came, and he was playing his music so loud. And I know you're going to be like, old lady, what are you doing? Seriously, it was so loud because we were sitting right in front of it, so we moved to the other side of the bar. But I gave it three songs, and there were three songs. I'm like, okay, he's too young of a DJ for me, because after three songs, I didn't recognize any of them, and none of it made me want to dance, so we just came home.
Yeah, she texted me. She's like, come over to the branch office bar, and it's a hole in the wall. It has regulars. Everybody knows each other. Actually, I went there with my boss once, and the people that I met there on that night have asked her, so how's Sarah doing? And I'm just like, okay, am I returning? I don't know. But yeah, I got your text, and I'm like, nah, man, you guys come over and drink. But by that time, you guys were already home.
Yeah, I was already home. And I only woke up. I fell asleep. Who knows at what time? I think we made home by like 10:30. And I only woke up because people started
fireworks,
lighting fireworks off at midnight. Yeah. So that was it. That was my New Year's. It started off strong.
All right, guys, now it's time for Chisme de la Semana. Kristen, what do you have for chisme today?
So for today, I have some chisme that is pretty fresh off of the internet that I just happened to see. And usually I see these things pretty late because I'm not really paying attention. But I'm excited to read, and it is in the very early stages, so we do have some time to wait. But there is a sequel that is being worked on to the 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later franchise called 28 Years Later. So, interestingly enough, this horror series began, wait for it, in 2002. I barely met Eddie in 2002. That must have been one of the very first date movies we ever went to go see. I'm like, that's not even true. Like, why is this article lying to me? Like, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago. Oh my God, don't say it out loud.
I'm going to say it out loud. I was 8 years old.
No.
2002. I was 8 years old.
How dare you do that
to us? How dare you?
Oh, I feel super old.
So, per the Hollywood... Oh, yeah, sorry.
I have distinct memories of that movie. I don't think I ever fully watched it because my cousins were horror fans, so they had it. And I remember them playing that movie to scare all the little kids out, and it worked.
Well, I remember being in the movie theater and just grasping onto Eddie because this was the first iteration of a zombie that I ever experienced that moved so quickly and just like able to like jump over cars, and like this was not your grandmother's zombie. And it was so anxiety provoking watching that movie theater and seeing that and seeing them chase them and running so fast. I'm like, there's no way I would have survived.
Oh, yeah.
But
absolutely.
Per the Hollywood Reporter, it's been revealed that 28 years later is officially in the works. The film is the second sequel to 28 Days Later, following the 2007 follow-up that was called 28 Weeks Later. And it's confirmed that the original 28 Days Later team is going to unite. So it's going to be director Danny Boyle and writer Alex Garland, which are going to be collaborating on this project. And it's also noted in the report that the plan is for this new movie to launch a new trilogy of quote unquote zombie or infected movies. And the sequel will be shopped around to studios this year. So we don't even have a studio who is going to distribute it yet. We are just being told that it's being worked on. So that's enough for me. I've waited years and years and years for Marvel movies to come out. So what's another movie to wait for? But it's interesting, 2007, that was like, I can't do the math real fast, but that's a long time ago. Being the last time that we had a 28 Days movie come out. I actually even have the, I was collecting the single issues every time I found them in dollar bins too, because there was a comic that came out.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, yeah. So there is my cheese.
That's pretty awesome news. All right, guys, it's now time for On My Radar. And On My Radar, guys, I'm very excited about this. The Echo miniseries that is being streamed right now. I think I watched the first three episodes because I had to go to sleep. But I'm so excited, and I feel a little bit sorry because this was a – Echo is a Echo is a character that is from Marvel Comics, and her name is Maya Lopez. And for the longest time, I thought she was Latina.
Yeah, me too.
Because I never read, the story. And the thing is, I'm kicking myself, is because it was co-created by David Mack. And as you guys know, I'm a humongous David Mack fan. I do remember the art that he created because he also did the cover art for series. And then I was looking up information because I'm not familiar, like I said, with Echo. And the character that was created by Joe Quesada and David Mack was from the Cheyenne Nation. But and watching the series, she's from the Choctaw mm-hmm. Nation. So there's been a little bit
I
of changes.
Why.
But let me just say, dude. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it has to do with the history of the Choctaw people because there's a lot of, like, history that the imagery comes out in the series, which is just super amazing. There's a bit of a supernatural element to it as well, which is not something that was part of the character beforehand. But I really am loving this series. Love it so much that I started signing as I was learning sign language while watching this series. That's how freaking amazing it is. Also, I love, and I gotta say this, but if you're gonna watch this series, you cannot just put it in the background or do something else with it, because there are moments where you are also quote unquote deaf, because you could, and I love these, the swelling of like heartbeat, like she can hear, she can feel her own heartbeat. And that is what is being portrayed in the series as you're watching it. Plus a lot of the stuff is like all the dialogue and all the acting is just basically sign language and your body language and your facial features. There's no words. It's super amazing. I think they're doing an amazing job on how they're making the series. It's just so cool. There's a lot of history of like the Choctaw Nation, which I thought was super cool. And I'm really freaking loving this. You guys have to watch it. I can't say more wonderful things about it. We have the reprisal of Fisk, the Kingpin by Vincent D'Onofrio. Mm-hmm. I always say his name wrong. And then also we know that Echo came out in other episodes, and I think it was Hawkeye.
And that's what it was.
It's played by Hawkeye. The same actress, Alakwa Cox. And this character is her acting debut. So she's really killing it, man. The action sequences are so good. I'm so glad because they must have hired the same person for Daredevil. There's some cameo appearances that I don't want to spoil for you guys, but it's so fucking good. It's so cool. It has inspired me to like learn sign language. Like that is just, oh my God, I can't say enough. The acting, the effects, the history of the Choctaw Nation and all that imagery, and it's just the acting. I'm just so impressed with her acting ability, and she is deaf, and she is also an amputee, which is exactly what Echo is. So like, it's like, it blows my mind how they found somebody, and it's not like computer CGI, like not having part of her leg. It's just, it's her, the actress herself. It's just amazing. You guys have to watch it. I'm going to go watch it again. I'm going to go start it from the beginning all over again. It's so good. The only thing I do have to say that, and now I want to interview David Mack about this character and how he feels about this miniseries. I mean, I'm all over the place with this. Like, I want to do so much with this information. But also the only thing that really bothers me about this series is the spaces between it. What I mean by that is, you know how like they do the fade out, fade in kind of thing, like when they're like, what, remember in the old days when we used to have commercials in our series, mm-hmm. and they kind of faded out into commercial, yeah. and then faded back mm-hmm. in. Well, they do that, these pauses in the series, but they're so distracting because they're so like, it's kind of abrupt. I think that it would have flowed better if they didn't do such a abrupt fade out. Because we're seeing it without commercials. So, but that's the only thing that bothers me about it. The music, the acting. Like I was telling Jen, I was telling you guys, I said, honestly, I think Echo, the Marvel series, has poached all the actors from Reservation Dogs. but it's great to see familiar faces on the screen because Reservation Dogs did have this last season last year. So I'm so glad that it was such a good series. Man, I love that series so badly. But I hear that I hear that they're thinking about making a movie called Reservation Dogs. Yes. So once I know more about that, we'll speak more on that. But dude, Echo, you guys gotta watch it for sure. All right, guys, it's that time again. La hora de la cervecita. Oh my goodness. What are we drinking today, girls?
So. That's me opening the can.
I'm about to open mine right now, too.
But yes, and we are drinking a cinnamon dolce, which is a nitro stout from Firestone. Ooh. And I don't know. Do you know, Sarah, is this an seasonal drink? It sounds very holiday-ish.
I believe it's a seasonal drink. Yes, I got these because I wanted to do like seasonal Christmassy mm-hmm. drinks. But then I didn't get them dispersed to everyone in time. So we're doing it in the new year, guys. But yes, this is a seasonal stout. It's a cinnamon dolce. And this one I got in, you know where I got this? I got this at BevMo.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
So, yes. So I'm very interested. Wow, it smells amazing.
Yeah, I can
so
smell
far
the cinnamon
already.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. What do you guys think so
this
far?
This is a Starbucks drink.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Pour, put this in, like,
yes,
like make
oh my
it
gosh
really cold. Pour it in. Put that the vanilla sweet cream on top. This is the nitro cold.
Yes. Yes.
With sweet cream. With the vanilla sweet cream. Or the cinnamon sweet cream.
Whichever
one. And
the cinnamon was very muted in the beginning, but at the end, very, very pronounced and strong, which I kind of enjoy. I like it. It's not overbearing or overshadowing the rest of the flavor.
Yeah, it says to agitate it before opening.
Oh, nope,
you guys?
I didn't do that.
I didn't do that.
I did that. And it says also pour somehow, but I can't really read it. Oh, pour straight down. So I think when you do that, it gives it a head. So I think I think if we poured it into a glass and do the straight down pour, where we would give it a nutty head.
I am
there is kind
never
of a nutty
fancy enough to pour my beer in a glass.
No head.
Except for when I go to that Mexican restaurant.
Oh, no head.
Where they, little head.
Where they serve their beer in very frosty
this
glasses.
Looks, tell me you wouldn't get this and this is in a Starbucks drink.
Yeah, it does look like it. Look at how dark it is.
Yes, it's black as night.
What's the ABV? I can't see. It's dark in here where I am.
You know what? I can't even tell. Does it even say? Let me Google
it
that.
It should.
6%.
Oh, there it is.
6%.
The 6
it's in the front, yeah.
That's nothing.
Yeah, but it's full of flavor. Yeah.
No, because we've had nitros before and they haven't been very strong. They've been like 4, maybe 5. So the fact that this nitro stout is actually 6%, which on the scale of stouts, very low. But on the scale of nitros that we've had before, it's high. Decent.
Yeah. It has a little creamy element too, like maybe like a little kind of chocolate with that kind of
100%.
Feel. 100%. And there's a little kind of, very little kind of like liquory taste of kind of like a nut, maybe a walnut.
A cacao maybe nut.
Cacao nut, yes. Yes. I mean, I didn't look up the ingredients, but it's very flavorful and you know what? Actually, mine has low carbination.
Nitro.
Do you guys
the
have
nitros are low carbonation.
I don't drink enough nitros to know more about the carbonation, but usually I'm unhappy with that. But this one is pretty delicious. I'm not unhappy with it at all. I'm actually really impressed. I want to try this next year. Ooh, what if we can find it on tap? That would be awesome.
Well, we definitely have an opportunity to try a lot of Firestone beers on tap because there is an R&D brewery for Firestone in Venice. I don't know if it's Venice or Playa, but over in that area, very near to where between here and Santa Monica. And Eddie and I went for Halloween, I think, for our anniversary. Amazing food. They have amazing chefs on staff there. And they have so many beers on tap that are cornerstone beers for Firestone. But they are specifically an R&D brewery.
What's R&D?
Research and development. So,
oh, yes, you said that before, yeah.
They specifically try out new beers there and try to formulate new brews. And then if they hit here, they'll send them to their main brewery in San Luis Obispo. And if they hit there, then they will mass produce and send them out.
Nice. Okay. While you were telling me that, which is super interesting news and information that I would definitely like to try that. Jen was making herself a beer cocktail. Jen, can you tell the audience what you are doing?
So you guys were really emphasizing a lot of those notes, and I was just all like, in my mind, I was just like, you know what? This is like a cold, kind of watered down, like coffee hot chocolate slash cold brew. So I was just like, you know what would taste really good with it? This rum that I have here on my table. So I poured some rum in it, and let me tell you, this is the best fucking thing I have ever drank.
Wow.
Wow. And you know, this is the interesting part. Like, we don't come across a lot of beers that could lend themselves to become beer cocktails, sort of like the Shandy, mm-hmm. or, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, man, you're absolutely right. I feel like I should be like in a snowy cabin in front of the fireplace and making these cocktails.
Yeah.
That now, ooh, like, I'm you know so what? Peaked. I want to do it.
Baileys. Oh my God, I wish.
Oh,
I
had Baileys. Like, yes. If I
poured, like, if I had like actual like hot chocolate or coffee or something like that, like poured this in and then poured some Baileys in. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay, I have Baileys. So while I'm looking for the Baileys, can you tell us about our rating scale,
Kristen? Please do. Oh my God.
You guys are funny. So we have a rating scale that is a 5-point rating scale, where a 1 is very unsatisfied. A 2 out of 5 is just regularly unsatisfied. A 3 out of 5 is right in the middle, neutral. A 4 out of 5 is satisfied. And a 5 out of 5 is very satisfied. But in order to satisfy all of you weebs at heart out there, if we go anything above a 5 out of 5, it is a Super Saiyan. So I am now watching Sarah pour her drink as directed from the can straight up. And she is going to add Baileys to it. So I wonder if this brew is actually, we think it's seasonal, but I wonder if it comes out every year.
Oh yeah, we gotta find out. Okay, I'm gonna drink it, guys.
Okay. So
oh my God, you could see the Baileys setting on the bottom there. Okay.
So here goes Sarah to drink her new concoction.
Oh my God. That's the stuff. Oh,
nice.
That's good. That's a winter drink.
You just created, both of you just created. We should write this down. We should have a Comadacy Comics beer cocktail recipes.
Oh, absolutely.
If you don't like a beer, throw candy or other liquor in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jen's infamous sucker candy.
Candy, that beer tastes good.
So I already shared our rate. Sarah, would you like to?
Oh, wow.
Are you going to rate with the Baileys inside of it or without?
Well, I'm going to do both. The first one is without. And for me, just the transportation, this beer took me to like a beautiful place. I'm going to give it a full hard on. No, wait. It's called
satisfied or very satisfied.
I'm going to go very satisfied.
That's a 5.
With the Baileys, I'm going to be Super Saiyan, baby. This went to a Super Saiyan. And, ooh, you know what would be really cute? If you put, like, a little, like, cinnamon stick just for, like, aesthetic.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I'm super happy with this. Okay, go ahead.
All right.
What do you rate it?
So, I'll go next. This is... Oh. Okay, go ahead.
This is Jen. And, honestly, like, we've had nitros before. And I've had nitros on my own because I really wanted to like them. And a lot of them have left me disappointed. This one did not. Honestly, it's got really incredible flavor. It it does remind me a bit of, like, because it's pretty flat, because it's a nitro beer, it does remind me of more of that European style of beer, which I wasn't really fond of, but in this case I'm just like, it's really like hitting the spot. So I'm gonna go without the rum that I poured into it, I'm gonna give it also like a very satisfied 5 out of 5. with the rum, this shit is straight bonkers, man. This is a Super Saiyan. Like, honestly. Good. Good on, what is it, Firestone? Yeah, fucking Firestone. Come
Firestone.
On.
So, right?
Firestone.
The dark horse in the running.
Gets a lot of slack from me.
Because of 805? Yeah, we know.
They're 805.
And you're right. You're justified. That 805 is trash.
But honestly, I drank 805 draft out of their San Luis Obispo brewery, and I actually enjoyed it. And I think I shared with you some of the history that they shared with us, and it made me endeared to the beer. So, but I do not have any rum. I did not have any Baileys. The closest I have is some whiskey and whipped cream, but I'm in the middle of my Whole 30, so I can't.
I'm so sorry.
But I really did enjoy it. The cinnamon flavor was so pronounced at the end, and it really just added to the flavor. 100%, I think Jen's description of it being a Starbucks drink, cold brew, was right on the nose. And there was definitely that smoky, ashtray-y coffee flavor for me anyway. but I enjoyed it. So I'm giving it a 5 out of 5. Very satisfied. Maybe if I'm able to add any extras next time I have it, it will jump to Super Saiyan.
And that has been our beer review. All right, guys, now it's time for our book review. What are we reviewing today, Jen?
So today we are reviewing Husk, book one, or issue one?
Issue one.
By Al Acevedo. Even death fears the end. So I'm going to read the small synopsis that we have here in the beginning of this issue. Husk, a mortal youth dying for a do-over. The guide of souls running from death itself. Their alliance will make them the target of a threatening deity, and their best chance at survival lies in a power that may just destroy them both. The comic series you are about to read deals with sensitive topics and situations regarding death, gang violence, and narcissistic abuse. It is recommended for mature audiences. Reader discretion is advised. So, Sarah, mind telling us where you got this issue? Because this was brought to our attention by Sarah.
Yes, I met the creator of this comic, Al Acevedo, at QCon. And they told me about the story, and I was like, immediately, they also have a web, have it on a web series. So I was like, oh, I'll check it out on the web. And they said, you know, it'll read, I recommend it'll read better in the comic book format. So I decided to purchase one. And then we saw them again, I think, at Latino Comics Expo. And I believe that's when Kristen met them. And then again, we talked to Al at LA Comic Con. And that's where we got the second issue, the second copy of the first issue. So what we have to do is we have to get 3 copies because we're remote recording these episodes. And so then Al went to the shop to meet Kristen and talk about her comic, their comic. And then Kristen got the 3rd copy. So now we have all 3 copies, each one of us. And and then that's how we are able to review it. But also, Al has been listening to our podcast, and I did a small interview for the coverage at LA Comic Con, and I was really floored by their interview with us. So I was just like, we have to review this comic because they have talked about it, and I'm like, that's super super cool premise. So what did you guys think so far about the story as it has unfolded in this first issue?
So I have never been in love with a concept more in my life and with this creator's writing style and artwork. this is so fucking good. Like, I was, I think we've all kind of like developed this habit of kind of leaving everything to be read at the last minute.
Don't be mad at us.
Yeah, sorry, my bad. But we do eventually do it, and sometimes, like, if we're really excited about it, we do it ahead of time, or sometimes we forget. But I was reading this, and I took the time after I got off of work to like sit down and read it, and oh my god, immediately, even from the cover in and of itself, I was immediately hooked. Honestly, until you told me that it was originally a webtoon, I would not have believed it, because the pacing of this is so well done. The writing is so, oh, like, I am in love with every aspect of this book. So it is very heavily based in, you know, like, Mexica mythology. And it has, of course, been modernized. And I think we read a lot of books and stuff like that, and there has been a lot of books that have come out with this, like, idea of playing with the gods and stuff like that, and, like, these deals that are made, and, like, they're, like, the based on, like, either, like, the twin heroes or, like, Quetzalcoatl and stuff like that. But this was a whole new spin and take on it that I absolutely adore, because it feels more like a myth in action, instead of one that has already been told or is being reshaped. This is one that is actively happening. And I really, really appreciate that freshness to what is becoming like a pretty like common, like, and I mean, that's what myths are here for. Myths and stories and stuff like that, they tell us a story about ancient values, but also like how they have shaped people how they are today. And so, of course, myths like that are always going to get retold, and sometimes it can get exhausting. And I think with something like Mexica / Aztec mythology, there isn't enough that it isn't being tired out yet. But for me, I like a lot of like every other book that we were picking up was just like a retelling. I'm just like, okay, yeah, whatever. This is more than a retelling. It is an adaptation of what is very old mythology in really truly modernizing it without feeling like it's either pandering or trying too hard. And I really, really appreciate it. I am so in love with this book. I cannot wait to read whatever they have out or whatever it is that they are going to come out with.
Yes, I know Al has been stated on their website that they were taking a break until March. So, but I know that the second issue is in the works. And as a matter of fact, if you guys take a look at the cover, in the inside of the cover, it says this is the second printing of this first issue.
Wow.
I gotta say, this is Sarah. And first of all, let me tell you, The paper used in this comic is quite extraordinary.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people don't talk about this enough, but it's not enough sometimes to just get your story out. Like, if you go above and beyond with the printing, it makes a big difference. And this one, the pages are nice and thick. Even the smoothness of and texture of the pages is just really... I've not seen this before. I don't think I've ever seen this before. I really, really love it. I love when it starts off and we're reading the dialogue bubbles in Nahual, but then there's the translation immediately below it, and I thought that was really clever. The drawings are really spectacular. I really am loving the portrayal of how the spirits look when they're in Mictlan. Am I saying that right, Jen?
Yeah.
Mictlan. Okay, good. And at first I was a little bit confused, like, where is the story going? Because, you know, I never read the back or what it's about. I just go into it. Like, where is this going? Where are we going with this? And it just really just opened up to me. Like, in the middle of the comic, the first issue, I was just like, are they going to give us more? I was kind of afraid that it would end and I would like be like, oh, I don't know enough about the story. But it was just coming to life to me. And as I was reading it, some of the words that I did not know, I wrote them down and then I looked them up. So for instance, Teyolia means spirit or soul that leaves its heart in as it goes to the next world, which is interesting. Xisha is interest, and Xistomotlatlo means chemical, Solot means water dog, and Tezcatlipoca is the god or that is translated to smoky mirror. So I was just like, oh, all this stuff that I'm learning as I'm reading this comic is just really great. I just, of the five deaths, five stages of death. I mean, and then you get introduced to these living characters, Zacarias, Mateo, and Gabi, and they are clearly people that are making bad choices in their life by working with the cartels or something like that. We're obviously in Mexico with the story, and then stuff happens. I don't want to ruin it because seriously, you guys got to find this book. You guys got to find this book and read it. What did you think, Kristen?
So similarly to you, Sarah, while as I was reading the book, I became super interested in kind of educating myself on the origins of a lot of these mythologies, because I'm not, and I've shared this before in other podcast when we've read books that deal with Aztec and Mayan mythology, I'm not well versed in it the way that, and I'm not even well versed in Greek or Roman either, even though that we spent like a whole year studying that when I was in eighth grade. but it really fascinates me. It fascinates me how ancient cultures have these amazingly just very detailed stories that they shared from generation to generation, and how they worship these gods and actually sacrificed a lot of their own people to these gods because of their beliefs. And so once I actually was reading a little bit more, and most specifically about the five levels of death, I kind of started understanding a little bit more about what was going on in the book, and I felt like it was super creative and very interesting the way that how Jen actually said it's not a retelling, it's like an adaptation. It's like exactly like she's saying, it's like we are witnessing it happening. And it was just super, super interesting the way that Elle kind of set up the deity part of the story in the beginning. And then we jump to what I'm assuming is modern day with the characters who are exactly, as you said, Sarah, involved in really bad decision making. We basically see how both of those character and storylines come together towards the end of this issue. I was super stuck on the title of the book. I was like, what the hell does any of this have to do anything with Husk? Like, I have no idea where this is going. I read the entire book. What does it mean? And it wasn't until I read the back matter that it made sense to me, because Elle actually talks about why they wrote this book and how it kind of came to be. And it basically, I'll share with you the first part. It says, Husk is a story that comes from a deeply personal place, having its beginnings in November of 2019, when I began my journey to reconnect with my Mexican heritage and to find what it meant for me to be mixed and Chicanx. Although along the way, my searching led me to learn about the Mexica ideology concerning the cyclical relationship between life and death. Legends involving the god, Xolotl, and the five deaths a person undergoes through their lifetime. And when I read that, I was like, oh my God, it makes sense to me now. A husk like a corn husk that you peel away the layers, and each layer of these deaths that the Aztecs believed in transformed the soul into something different. And I'm like the light bulb went off in my head. I'm like, oh my God, that is like so amazing. Like the relationship between the name and just the story that Elle is telling. So I'm super excited to continue on the story and to read more. And the art, like, I know, Sarah, you always say how impressed you are when it is somebody who does the entire thing, not just the writing, but also yes. the art. And I actually spoke to Al when they came into the shop, and they were talking about how the lettering was also them, and they did a lot of research and just really did their due diligence to be able to provide a book of such high quality on all the different fronts of what goes into making a comic book. So I absolutely was by the end super enthralled with the story, super enthralled with the process, and also super looking forward to anything that comes next in this story.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so sorry. Yes, characters are introduced in Mexico, the foothills of un volcán. So, yes, I totally forgot about that. But yes, the characters themselves, Zacarías, I love it because Mexicanos, they always give you an apodo or a surname or and so you see kind of that kind of... I think it was really true to like how Mexican people are with the apodos and, you know, kind of always kind of seeking your insecurity and kind of attacking you for that. We have Zacarías, which is kind of the youngest, I guess, of the three characters we're introduced to. And then Mateo is like Zacarías's boss, but he's also his primo. And then we have Gabby, who's the female, but she's really tough like nails. And we have her kind of making fun of Zacarías because he kind of is always kind of zoned out or kind of daydreaming, or his mind is elsewhere. And that's kind of what gets him into trouble in the story as it unfolds. But definitely check it out. I feel like the artwork is really amazing. I really like the imagery, how when you kind of go to the inframundo and like it's almost like being submersed in water, which I thought was really clever, because that's kind of like you want to get kind of a disconnect from like living and death. And that just kind of that imagery of being submersed in water just really kind of separates from when your past life to like now what's going to happen to your soul. So I thought that was really clever. But yeah, I really definitely enjoyed this, and the artwork is amazing. So I just really can't wait till issue number two. So do we have anything more to say about?
Well, I just wanted to share a little bit about what Elle talks about in their introduction on coffee. And that's KO-FI. It's kind of like a Patreon website, and you can definitely look them up at Husk Comic on coffee.com/Husk Comic, and that's ko-fi.com/Husk Comic. But in their introduction, and their pronouns are they, them, they introduce themselves as mixed queer comic creator currently working on Husk, where describe the book, where gods, gangs, and gays collide. And we don't get too much of it, or at least I didn't, and maybe I just it went right over my head. But the book specifically is featuring an asexual leads lead characters. So It's featuring asexual leads, Mexica mythos, and a dash of horror. So if any of those things resonate with you or are exciting for you to read on top of what we've talked about the book, definitely check it out. And you can go to huskcomic.com to get your very own copy.
All right, guys, I guess we're ready to rate the comic book. What are our rating scale, Kristen?
So our rating scale for books is on a scale of 1 to 3 conchas. 3 conchas being the most that Jen's mom ever let her eat in one sitting. So, of course, that was the best. So I'll go ahead and get started. And I am going to give Husk 3 conchas and a cup of cinnamon dolce with Bailey's and rum. Because that does sound really yummy. But I really enjoyed the book, and I really appreciate Elle's passion for this project. When they came into the shop, they really had a lot to say about all the work and love that they've put into the book, and kind of expanded a little bit more on the back matter of why they wrote the book, and what discoveries they made of themselves while kind of researching their own connection to their heritage. So 3 conchas and a cup of spiked dolce, cinnamon dolce.
Well, I'm going to second that. That's exactly the perfect rating for this comic, this first issue. We definitely need to learn more about this. There's so many questions I have about the ring, about, you know, just the tattoo. There's so many things I want to know. So I'm super excited about this. So I can't wait to issue number 2. So that's 3 conchas and a spiked cinnamon dolce. What about you, Jen?
I'm going to third that decision as well. 3 conchas, the entire panaderia, spiked dolce. You know what? Throw in the food from Posadas. I don't fucking care, girl. Boy, they, them, I'm so sorry. Killed it. This is such a good, and this is just issue 1. This is what's killing me. This is just issue 1. Like, I cannot wait to read more. Like, this is so good.
Absolutely. And that has been our book review. All right, guys, now it's time for En la Librería. Jen, what do you have for us today?
So today I have Aether Beyond the Binary, a gender diverse fantasy anthology. And then the little synopsis under here says, join us for 17 stories of characters with genders outside the binary, exploring modernesque worlds changed by magical aether. So this is by Duck Prince Press. I believe I have done other like stuff for them that I've shouted out here before, but for this one it is I believe they've had other works on here. They've had 5 other works on here on Kickstarter, but I'm gonna read the introduction that they have right here. What would the earth look like if the very atoms that compose the planet were suffused with magical aether? How would our lives in the modern world be different if this aether was discovered last year or last decade or last century or last millennia? How might the people who inhabit this oh-so-different but still modern Earth explore their gender identities? These are the questions we pose to the 17 authors chosen to contribute to Duck Prince Press' newest anthology, Aether Beyond the Binary. Their diverse answers are bound together in this must-not-miss collection of stories about magical worlds, adventures and mysteries, new chances and well-earned endings, and characters as gender-diverse as the worlds they inhabit. What is Aetherpunk? Imagine a world where there's technology not unlike what we have in the modern world, except that instead of that technology operating using the principles that we now would call science, that technology operates using magic. That's Aetherpunk. The awesome union of technology and complex magical systems in magic-filled worlds to produce unique settings that resemble modern-day Earth, but are also very, very different. With Aetherpunk stories, the impossible becomes possible and new solutions to the world's problems become available. You can learn more about the history of Aetherpunk and what Aetherpunk is in the blog post that they have linked by the anthology editor here on the page. What is a character outside the gender binary? The gender binary consists of the two most common genders, male and female. Most people, whether they are cisgender or transgender, fall within this binary. Nonetheless, gender is a spectrum, and there are many gender identities that are outside, between, among, or a combination of cis and trans, male and female. One umbrella term for these identities is non-binary, and specific identities include agender, like the lead editor Nina Waters, gender fluid, bigender, demigender, pangender, and exgender. Every story in Aether Beyond the Binary features at least one non-binary main character, and many stories utilize neo pronouns. The core concept of Aether Beyond the Binary is simple and compelling. Create intriguing main characters outside the gender binary and set them loose to explore the modern world twisted or barely tamed, enhanced, or destroyed by magical Aether. The power source may replace technology, supplement it, or oppose it. These characters may be agender, gender fluid, bigender, or any other non-binary identity. The thread that these tales share is exploration of the world around them and of the self. We propose no conclusions. Instead, we demonstrate how far-reaching the questions are and how expansive the range of possible answers can be, thereby broadening the discussion about the nature of gender and the place of genderqueer characters in science fantasy fiction. We hope you'll join us to explore the endless possibilities of these magical worlds. Aether Beyond the Binary features 17 stories, each up to 7,500 words. We aim to publish it as an ebook and EPUB and PDF, and to print it digest size, 5.5 by 8.5, in both trade paperback and hardcover formats. Aether Beyond the Binary features a spectacular wraparound cover by non-binary artist Mar Sprague. This will be printed as a lovely gloss dust jacket for the hardcover edition. And then he goes on to say a little bit more about what Duck Prints Press is and does. The contributors who are going to be featured on here, which is going to be 17 of them, the campaign rewards, and then a little like preview of kind of like the artworks and the budget and a breakdown of the budget. So you can always support a campaign without expecting a reward. You just want to show your support. But the base pledge starts at $15, which is where you get the ebook. The second level above that is $25, and this is when you get the Aether Beyond the Binary trade paperback. And then at $40, you can get the hardcover, which is going to feature that very nice wraparound cover, as well as the dust jacket. And then at $55, you can get Aether Beyond the Binary, the trade paperback, plus merch, which I believe includes stickers, a pin, some like postcards, arts. And then it keeps going on from there, with the last level being at $70, which is the hardcover one plus the merch. This is a really interesting story, and I believe I do have some I've backed Duck Prints Press works before, because they've done books, but they've also done like pins and stuff like that. They're really, really good. They're really good at anthologizing, and they, all of their projects have been successfully funded, and they have delivered. So Aether Beyond the Binary, so Aether is A-E-T-H-E-R, a gender diverse fantasy anthology on Kickstarter.
That sounds pretty awesome. All right, guys, now it's time for Juntos y Fuertes. Kristen, what do you have for us today?
So today, our Juntos y Fuertes segment, which is a segment where we highlight projects that are put together by members of marginalized groups, is brought to you by some of our booth, what are they? Our booth brothers and sisters at ShiroCon that we experienced just a short month ago, which seems like forever ago, at LA Comic Con. And we shared booth space in the Shiro Alley with Geek Girl Society. And Geek Girls Society is a club for geeky girls ages 8 to 18, and they are accepting new members. They're an elite group of girls who celebrate fandoms, share them with one another, and learn all about what it takes to be an amazing geek girl. There are several ways that you can participate, and you can go to geekgirlssociety.com to find out their membership pages for more information. They meet twice a month to discuss all things geeky, make fantastic crafts, play games, and explore the pop culture universe. They have group meetings currently in the San Fernando Valley and the Santa Clarita Valley here in LA County. And you can actually contact them about maybe hosting meetings in other areas. Wouldn't it be amazing if there was a Commodity Comics hosted Geek Girl Society in the South Bay? So
that would be awesome.
What I actually found super interesting is that an offshoot that has recently developed from Geek Girl Society is a new group called Geek Girls Forever. Now, what is Geek Girls Forever, you may be asking? Well, let me tell you, it is a community of geeks in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s and beyond, who share fandoms with one another while celebrating all the amazing things that women can do. So it says on the website, which is a separate one, this is geekgirlsforever.com, that first and foremost, they're a place where people can come and socialize, make cool things, play games, go places together, and in general, just enjoy spending time with like-minded people of all ages. Again, they have a meetings page that you can find more details on the kind of activities that they do. They have a calendar page where you can find out what events are happening. Again, they have a membership page that I think has pay scale for the type of memberships that you can apply for. But some upcoming events are a game night in Newhall on January 12th. And then there's a Dungeons and Dragons campaign on January 13th. And then there's online book club. They're going to be discussing Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies on Wednesday, January 17th. They do crafts, they play games, they read books, and it's online as far as the book club goes. So you could totally participate in that if you're not local. The membership for the Geek Girls Forever starts at $15 and then goes up to $35. And for $35, you get all the member benefits, plus you get the monthly graphic novel. So the novel that they're going to be discussing is included in your monthly fee. So I thought that was super cool. They're sourced from local comic shops. So they're supporting their LCSs as well. So super cool for adult geeks, because there is a question here that says, hey, I'm not a girl, am I allowed to join? And they say absolutely. They welcome everyone of any gender to participate in their club for those who live the geek life. So that is geekgirlsforever.com.
Oh, that sounds super cool.
Yeah.
Geek Girls Por Vida. That should be a sticker. All right, guys, now it's time for saludos. And saludos goes out today to the audience. And the reason estoy saludando a la audiencia today is because thank you guys for sticking around. I know we took a break. There was a lot of things happening and also the holidays. Mainly, Kristen had a lot of work to do, a lot of amazing stuff where she does adopt a family during the holiday season. And then she had to take care of her business aspect, of course, as well. So thank you guys for sticking around, for being patient. We're here now, and we hope to be here every week as well. So thank you guys so much for listening to us. We really appreciate that. We appreciate your patience. We appreciate you. Without you guys, we wouldn't be here. So saludos goes out to everybody out there who's listening to us today. All right, guys, it's not that time again. The end of the episode. Where can they find us, girls?
So you can always find us at our very own website, comadrecomics.com, where you can find links to all of our social media, including Facebook, Instagram, and our very, very cool YouTube channel, where we have our ancillary show, Juntos. No. It's not Juntos y Fuertes. Las Pláticas, where we interview creators and talk all about their amazing projects that they're working on.
Absolutely, guys. So again, thank you guys so much for listening to us. And we're going to have a busy year coming up, a lot of conventions, a lot of live appearances. So hopefully stick around, come on over to those events, say hi to us, mentanos la madre, I don't know, just come on over, say hello. So with that being said, this is the end of the episode. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
And that's on Period Network.